Well, good morning, everyone. Good to see you all. Good to see everyone there on Zoom land as well. Welcome. Damn, my glasses keep steaming up here a little. Just stop breathing. That would help. Well, this is our first Sunday of kind of like talks, regular talks within this practice period. We did our weekend last weekend. It went very well. And last Wednesday, Kate talked about right relationship in terms of the body, studying the body. And she pointed out that the Buddhist tradition from the very beginning has really highlighted the body, mindfulness of the body, being aware of being deeply grounded in the body. And this was certainly echoed in that beautiful quote that Kate read to us by Dogen, who lived, I think as Kate also said, about 2,000 years after the Buddha. So this tradition has carried on this kind of understanding that we need to ground ourselves in our bodies. So this is the quote. To study the way with the body means to study the way with your own body. It is the study of the way using this lump of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything that comes forth in the study of the way is the true human body. The entire world of the ten directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. How wonderful, isn't it? How wonderful this human body of ours. And of course, this has been honored and recognized in many other places and traditions in the world. And so I'd like to read a part of a poem that I think some of us will be quite familiar with. And it was written a little while ago, so the language is a little bit challenging, so please listen carefully. I sing the body electric. The armies of those I love engirth me, and I engirth them. They will not let me off till I go with them, respond to them, and discorrupt them and charge them full with the charge of the soul. Was it doubted that those who corrupt their own bodies conceal themselves? And if those who defile the living are as bad as they who defile the dead? And if the body does not do fully as much as the soul? The love of the body of man or woman, box account. The body itself, box account. That of the male is perfect. That of the female is perfect. So these are the opening lines from I Sing the Body Electric, a poem by the famous American poet, of course, Walt Whitman. And it's in his collection, Leaves of Grass. So in this poem, the speaker of the poem, you know, really sings the praises of the human body. I only read part of the poem. It sings the praises of the body, and that the human body of any gender or age is nothing less than a miracle, wonderful beyond description, because, as the poet says, it gives each of us our own distinct identity and yet connects each of us to every other person. Now, Whitman, in this poem, celebrates the primacy of the body and its importance in forging connections between people. And throughout the poem, he really proclaims the body places us in the web of a beautiful, dancing, and joyful universe. And he also goes on to say, this is, remember, just kind of sometime after the end of the Civil War in the United States is when he wrote this. He goes on to remind his readers, all human bodies have the same blood running through their veins, regardless of race. But his view of the body, the view that he presents in this poem, I think is a far cry from the image of the body beautiful and body perfect that the media today encourages us to strive for. And I could go on and, you know, kind of talk about the various lotions, products, exercise plans, treatments, surgeries available today that we have, all to urge us to try grasp this kind of elusive goal, a perfect, buff, pain-free body. And these messages that we get place us in, I think, kind of a constant conflict with the body's reality. For discomfort, disease, illness, aging, limitations, any and all ailments of the body are simply part of the deal of embodiment. So we struggle, or sometimes we whine. When we become ill, we experience pain. When we believe our body is somehow wrong or faulty. And when we're caught there, Whitman's beautiful words, Dogen's beautiful words, the words of the early Buddhist teachers who talk about mindfulness of the body, they somehow fade away as we protest these unwelcome changes in the body. Something is wrong when the body no longer obeys, when the body is broken, when the body is in pain, when to us the body seems ugly. We each, of course, have our own experiences with discontent or anger focused on our body. In the busyness of life, we may forget that the body, like all things, is subject to change, and before long, we will be reminded. A tumble while we're running, a bike accident, a persistent flu, a nagging pain, worsening arthritis, a worrisome diagnosis, a weight gain, a weight loss, wrinkles, softening where there was firmness before, wrinkles where there was smoothness before. And maybe sometimes reactive judgments arise, right? Why is this happening to me? I can't bear this. It's not fair. I've been so careful. And maybe you are already facing the heart-wrenching, demoralizing, and sometimes infuriating changes and challenges of living with conditions that are not desired. So how do we relate to the body wounded, to the body imperfect, to the body broken? Perhaps we believe the body has let us down. It's not being as we wish it to be. It's not functioning as we wish it to function. And when that happens, isn't our inclination to fix the condition? And if that seems beyond us, then we try to ignore it or we blame it for our unhappiness. Right? This stupid leg just doesn't work the right way anymore. My hand won't do what it used to do. My eyes no longer see with the clarity they used to have. The body, or maybe a part of the body, now becomes the enemy and does not fit in with how perhaps I see myself, with my expectations. And of course, naturally, we take measures to treat what we can, to relieve the pain, to relieve the symptoms. But often we get so caught up in a desperate kind of loneliness or fear and a deep desire for things that simply cannot be. Betrayed by the body, we feel unsupported. For what is closer and more intimate to us than our own bodies? In our society, we tend to see an adversarial dynamic between health and sickness, right? Or health and something that is unhealthy in some way. Where sickness or whatever we seem to sense is broken within us is to be attacked. Our sickness, our physical flaws, our woundedness is an object somehow now apart from us and must be eradicated or changed in order for us to return to our earlier body, our earliest sense of what our body is and should be. And this is really a sad state of affairs, because there is no going back. And even if our condition improves or disappears, there's still no going back, because we will have been changed by that condition, whatever it was. And, of course, at some point in your life, in my life, another condition will arise that will be intractable. So with this attitude of trying to fix, constantly fix, repair, return to whatever that idea of normal was, I think we'll discover that the enemy is always with us. And the battles are endless. One after another after another. I think this is what most of us, or many people today, struggle with. But the Buddhist tradition offers a different vision. I think one that encourages us to view the vibrant unity of all things. It's quite radical, but this understanding of right relationship to our body is to know that even our brokenness, even our sickness, is Buddha. In other words, our condition, our flaws, the wounds, are something with which we are in relationship to. Not as an enemy to be cast out or destroyed or conquered, but as an intimate part of one's life. Because after all, excuse me for a second. Should I have a straw? I could sip under my butt. So I was about to say, perfection and flawlessness that is so touted in contemporary society is overrated. And I'd like to read you another little bit of a poem, a different person, this time the American poet Wallace Stevens, who wrote a poem called Poems of Our Climate. And it begins with a rather prosaic image reflecting this idea of a perfect life. So here's the first verse. Clear water in a brilliant bowl, white and pink chrysanthemums. The light in the room more like a snowy air, reflecting snow. A newly fallen snow at the end of winter, when afternoons return. So in these few words, I felt, you know, when I read this, Stevens creates a very beautiful but a pretty kind of prosaic image. And Stevens recognizes this himself, because his next lines go like this. Still, one wants more. One would need more. More than a world of white and snowy scents. And then he explains why. And then this is I'm going to skip down to kind of the last verse, last stanza. Even though we have a perfect world, right, this beautiful, silent, beautiful bowl filled with chrysanthemums, quiet afternoon, he writes, there would still remain the ever-resting, the never-resting mind, so that one would want to escape, come back to what had been so long composed. The imperfect is our paradise. The imperfect is our paradise. Note that in this bitterness delight, since the imperfect is so hot in us, lies in the flawed words and stubborn sounds. The imperfect is our paradise, Stephen writes. Could this also be true for the imperfections of our bodies? The Zen tradition points out that our imperfections are Dharma gates. The mythological Buddhist view of the cosmos consists of six realms. We've talked about this before. The heavenly realm, the Asura realm, or the realm of kind of angry gods, the human realm, the animal realm, the hungry ghost realm, and the hell realm. And you may think, well, sign me up for the heavenly realm, please. Because the heavenly realm is free, is the realm of perfection, right? It's free of personal discomforts. But there's a problem. That those in that heavenly realm are oblivious to the sufferings of others. And the idea of practicing the Dharma, of developing deep insight into the true nature of one's life, does not occur to them, because they're busy all afternoon sipping margaritas, munching on chicken wings, watching wonderful Netflix movies, and doing the same thing the next day, right? It's paradise. But eventually, that perfection decays, right? Their kind of karma, so to speak, wears out. And they too are caught again in dukkha as they fall into the realms of more direct suffering. And it is said, you know, of all the realms, the human realm is the best one to be because we have just enough suffering. And, you know, to encourage us to engage in the Dharma, encourage us to really look closely at our life and our connection, our intimacy with everything. Perhaps when we feel in some small or great way betrayed by our body, it's not really a betrayal, but simply a part of this life. Not a part we hope for, not a part that we imagined. Right? I didn't imagine getting the flu, or COVID, or cancer, or HIV, or some other disease. I didn't imagine a broken leg, or a bruised shin. So we didn't imagine this. But whatever that is, that may bring us to an inner knowing, a truer view of the nature of this world. The Nobel laureate, Elie Wiesel, and the Holocaust survivor, I think I've talked about him before. He wrote the book Night. He wrote this: suffering confers neither privileges nor rights. It all depends on how you use it. If you use it to increase the anguish of yourself or others, you are degrading, even betraying it. Yet the day will come when we shall understand that suffering can also elevate. And this is also echoed, of course, in the Buddhist tradition. And Norman Fisher, Dzogchen Norman Fisher, our founding teacher of Mountain Rain, he writes this about suffering. Suffering is not a mistake. It's not a problem. It's not your fault. It's not my fault. It's not the government's fault. You and I and the government may make plenty of mistakes, but the question of suffering is much bigger than that. Suffering is pivotal for human life. It's what gives us the incentive, the vision, and the strength to really take hold of our lives spiritually. The title of this practice period, as I think I mentioned earlier, is Right Relationship, Healing and Nurturing Connection. So how do we heal the imperfect body, the broken body? Well, of course, we tend to the body as required. And of course, eating well and exercising to be healthy is generally a good policy, of course. Need medicine, take medicine. Of course, of course. But more is necessary. So here's a koan, one of the old Zen stories for our consideration. Dongshan, who's the Zen teacher that appears in this koan, was a monk from the 9th century China. And Dongshan was also one of the founders of our particular school, the Soto School of Zen. So here's the story. When Dongshan was unwell, a monk asked, "You are ill, teacher, but is there one who is not ill?" And Dongshan said, "Yes, there is." The monk said, "Does the one who is not ill look after you?" And Dongshan replied, I have the opportunity to look after him. The monk then asked, how is it when you look after him? And Dongshan said, then I don't see that he has any illness. Now, I'm not sure, but I believe this dialogue may have taken place near the end of Dongshan's life. At least that's my image. Clearly, he was ill. But his attendant, that monk, was, I think, pretty alert and saw that there was more than a sick teacher in front of him. There is one who is not caught by illness. There is one still engaged with the world and free of the weighty labels of being the invalid, the cancer patient, the one with flu, the one with MS, the one with COVID. I have the opportunity to look after him. I think this is Dongshan's way of telling us he is whole, complete. And in this wholeness, there is no illness that marks him as separate. In this wholeness, there is no illness that marks him as separate. Let me give you a contemporary example of this. Maureen Stewart was a Canadian. She was a famous pianist in her time and a Rinzai Zen teacher. I think probably the first woman Rinzai Zen teacher in North America. And she was an important teacher for Kathy Fisher, who's Norman's partner, and also for Norman as well. Norman studied with her as well. As far as I know, there's only one book, a collection of her talks, called Subtle Sound, The Zen Teachings of Maureen Stewart. And the reason for that is because she developed cancer. Not too long after she started teaching in the Zen tradition. And she died in 1990. So quite a while ago. Any rate, after her diagnosis that she had cancer, she continued teaching, and she would tell people she is not sick. And Norman tells the story that when she was a guest teacher at Green Gulch, where he and Kathy were both living, that many people, when they heard this at Green Gulch, they found this very confusing, and some assumed that she was in denial. And this was her response from part of a talk that she gave. The true face of this universe includes all things in it, good, bad, life, death, health, illness, all of it. There are many so-called healers in the world, but healers cannot bring us wholeness. The healing is already there in the wholeness. And the real goal of healing is to help the person in need of healing to be aware of this. At the deepest level, the so-called sick person has no sickness, and I am not sick. With deep gratitude to this practice, because of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, because of all of you, because of all of this that we have engaged in together, because of this indefinable, mysterious, unspeakable, marvelous, whatever it is, I really do feel no sickness. Well, Dongshan and Maureen Stewart, of course, were Zen teachers, right? well-known, famous Zen teachers. But what about the rest of us? The hoi polloi. Well, a few years ago, we had a visitor here to Mountain Rain, a Japanese friend of Louise's. His name was Teruyama Shinichiro, simply known as Shin. And he was a physicist who developed metastasized kidney cancer and basically told there was nothing they could do. And then he recovered. And I remember him as being full of humor as he presented the tale of his healing, which included cello playing, vegetarian diet, macrobiotics, if anyone's familiar with that, a certain age. That was all the rage. Greeting the sunrise every morning. He had special, many other practices too that he talked about. But I was particularly moved when he told us how he loved his cancer instead of fighting it. He saw his cancer as part of his life, part of his body, not the enemy that needed to be attacked. And what I took away from his presentation was not how to heal cancer, although the story of his journey was quite fascinating, but rather what needs to be healed is our idea that we are not whole at this moment. Earlier I asked, how do we relate to a body wounded, the body imperfect, the body broken? Shin tells us right relationship involves loving the wounded, the imperfect, the broken. The traditional teachings of mindfulness instruct us that right relationship is to first know what is happening as a felt sense, and then to cultivate an attitude of curiosity and kindness, tenderness towards the condition. And this is acceptance, not resignation, but a lively engagement with the conditions as they are. Your imperfect body is not a mistake. Your wholeness is not in the future when you get rid of whatever it is. But your wholeness is right now. This view is part of right relationship to the broken body. The body of pain, the body of disease, the body of illness, aging, limitations. So, let me end by saying this, and this is a bit quirky, I admit. But in the past few months, Kate and I have had the privilege of performing several wedding ceremonies. And so the traditional vows, because I was looking up traditional vows at one point, and they've kind of a little bit been on my mind. And I was thinking about our love-hate relationship with our bodies for various reasons, right? So here's a reworking of part of the marriage vows. For our body, your body and my body. Here it goes. Ready? Will you have this body and this mind in sickness and in health, in difficulty and success, in wealth and in poverty? That's the question. Answer, I promise to be true to you for better or worse, for richer or poorer, in good times and in bad, in sickness and in health. I will love you and honor you all the days of my life.